everyone. Welcome to another episode of Lee, Do You Remember This? I'm your host, Darlene Sussman, and what a special little treat that's going to throw you all for a goddamn loop. I am joined with a new co-host for this season because, you know what I realized? This is not exactly like recapping The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. This is recapping a very niche show where none of the people left their mark on culture, except for Keisha. Hey, girl, hey. Never forget, hey, girl, hey, wherever you are. But, you know, people don't really know the players. It's hard to really immerse yourself, get to know their personalities unless you're moving through this day by day. So I decided I'm going to bring on a co-host. And after having her do episode 3 with me, I was like, my God, the chemistry is palpable. And she put in a delicious amount of research and work. I said, this is a whimsical and prepared woman after my own heart. I think you guys are going to love her. Kelsey Lawrence, welcome to the pod.
I am honored to be here. When you reached out, I had such a cloud nine experience with episode 3. I even wanted to follow up and be like, that was so fun. I didn't, but I wanted to. That's how much it lingered after doing it.
Thank God you didn't. I would have been like, who is this stalker? Are you like in love with me? Okay, gay.
I knew that was exactly. I didn't want to be, as they say prominently in the show, lesbo about things.
Kelsey, tell everyone a little bit about yourself. I mean, I kind of found you. I mean, I don't know. It was years ago, but I was following you through your Instagram and your, you're co-host now. I don't have to like volley it to you.
No, I appreciate the volley. I love the volley. I am the editor of the currently offline, very famous magazine.com, which is going to be back online soon. I'm kind of redesigning it.
Ooh, a revamp.
It's very GeoCities inspired. That's kind of like, I wanted it to be its own little corner of like, kind of subculture, weird, glamorous, you know, writing, whatever else on the internet. And it looked very GeoCities, Y2K, which I do still love, but I wanted to like be able to kind of change it up a little bit more. I felt like elements of it were like a little pervasive right now. I wanted to just like change it up a little bit, basically. So
the market saturated, yeah. Even though we were on the ground floor.
I was going to say, I mean, were we ever? It's like when you see the elements out there, you're like, man, I was doing this back in 2018. But I was like, yeah, I need to like change things up a little bit. So I'm sort of elbowing my way through that. And that's what I do, though, is I do that. And I freelance write for different places about, you know, heart-shaped hubs, Cheesecake Factory, professional wrestling, highbrow moments.
I am thrilled to have you. If only just for the fact that I don't have to be constantly emailing people and be like, hey, would you mind being on my podcast?
It's like so not sexy to do that.
So here's another fun little injection into the podcast. We're really like getting wild, getting loose. So for some of you who maybe are not vibing with the Tila Tequila season, you know, for those of you who are complicit in the perpetuation of bi erasure, we will now be doing a sort of lead-in, I suppose, of a different segment that has nothing to do with Tila. So if you still want your fix of me, of Kelsey, and of the early 2000s, you can listen to the beginning of the podcast. And basically, it's going to be, I'm going to call it like today and Y2K, but to the number two, where we will be discussing different, you know, different blog articles, just any sort of event that happened within the sort of week-ish of when the podcast drops. So today we will be discussing a Gawker Stalker article that came out on March 7th, 2005, but has different events from around that week. And for those who don't know, Gawker Stalker was, I would say, the original Dumois. People would email in tips to Gawker.com of celebrity sightings, and they were as mundane as Dumois can be, but maybe more trustworthy because, you know, it was really so niche back then. And celebrities were getting very upset about
it. Oh, really?
Back then.
Wow.
Because it was the beginning of, I guess I would say, like surveillance culture, where people are just learning, don't put your whereabouts on Foursquare because, you know, someone could come and kill you.
Yeah.
So celebrities were very worried that people would know their whereabouts, like what neighborhood they lived, if Gawker was publishing these sightings on their website. And there were no Instagram stories where it's like up to the minute. It was like a week before because they had to compile them all and then put them together in a blog. So Gawker Stalker. It was snarky and also very New York people about town gossip. You know, they're talking about, I mean, in this Gawker Stalker, they talk about Lizzie Grubman, the publicist of the moment. She was one of their big targets that they made fun of. But, you know, in their defense, she did drive into a party in the Hamptons and injured like 15 people. So here's one Gawker Stalker that sort of jumped out at me. February 27th, quote, saw Katie Holmes in the Soho Sephora yesterday, wearing a pink wool coat, shades, and yapping into her cell phone. As I think I've read in other Gawker Stalkers, she is surprisingly tall, 5'7 or 5'8, and cute, though not much cuter than any other New York City cute girl.
Honest.
Really honest, but I would also say 5'7 to 5'8 is not surprisingly tall to me.
No, I was thinking that too. That was an odd detail. I'm 5'7. I don't consider myself capital T tall.
And I will say to this person, to this anonymous source, Katie Holmes is 5'9. I would say that is inching more towards surprisingly tall.
Totally.
That's how mundane we're talking about these Gawker Stalkers. It is like Dumois.
I loved that they said she was yapping. That's such a specific verb, talking related verb. She wasn't talking. She was yapping.
She was yapping. Well, she was a woman in 2005. Women in 2005 don't talk. They
yap like little chihuahuas.
Like little chihuahua bitches.
Yapping, I think, does kind of insinuate that somebody has an annoying voice.
I don't immediately jump to Katie Holmes has an annoying voice, but then when I think about her singing On My Own in Dawson's Creek, if there was a yapping of singing, I would say that was that. It was, you know, quite nasal. So maybe this was actually like a feminist who had no attachment to assigning a derogatory verb to Katie Holmes just because she's a woman. Maybe she was actually yapping.
Yeah, that's a great other angle on it. I've never seen Dawson's Creek, so I actually have no idea what she sounds like.
There's not a ton of other things that she's in. She's in, what is it? My president's, I'm dating the president's daughter. Is she in that? Or she's in one of those. There were a few different movies during the time. I think there are a couple president's daughters. One was Mandy Moore. Something like that. Yeah. People are probably yelling about it, but
sound off in the comments.
Sound off in the comments.
Yeah, nicely.
This girl shouldn't host this podcast. She doesn't know the difference between all the president's daughter films.
Oh no, I'm too scared of the haters.
No haters. No haters, please, because if you're too mean to me, I'll just stop doing the podcast because you make me feel bad about myself. And then what? Oh, God. Now they're going to be even worse.
I know. We should have even acknowledged it.
I cannot show weakness. Another one, this happened on March 5th. Claire Danes and Billy Crudup, pronounced Crudup, we learned.
That seems crazy.
Which I would argue is like not really how you, it's just Crudup.
Yeah.
Crudup. I guess it's Crudup, but it's not Crudup. It's not a doo-wop song. At the Saturday performance of Shock-Headed Peter at the Little Schubert Theater, she was nuzzling his neck and looking canoodly. She was looking canoodly. Of course, the big scandal, Billy left Mary Louise Parker when she was about to pop pregnant.
Wow.
For a 24-year-old Claire Danes.
I did not know this. That is wild.
It was very big amongst maybe like the middle-aged ladies of the world. Yeah. I have never liked Billy Crudup since.
Yeah, now I don't either. I was honestly, I mean, him and Almost Famous, what a great teen crush. But now it's been a little sullied hearing this news.
No, and you know, he's on Morning Show,
oh, yeah,
which I do watch because it is the most insane show I've ever seen, where somehow 90% of the cast are never in the same shot together. They're always just shooting each other out and just performing to a stand-in in a wig.
Oh my God. He's still with Claire Danes, so it's going to really date me. I'm sure they're not together at all, but just shot in the dark question.
No. So she had left her, I believe it was her husband, and he left Mary Louise. They got together. I think they're, I don't, I'm not entirely sure how long they were together, maybe like 3 or 4 years, maybe longer. But now he is married to Naomi Watts.
Okay.
And Mary Louise, you know, they still share a child together. She's apparently okay with it now, but she had written a memoir that was just like 34 letters to all the men I've dated or whatever. It's called 34 letters, but each chapter is a letter to a different man. And there's not a Billy Crudup letter, but there is a letter to a cab driver where she apologizes and she talks about being pregnant and like about to have the baby. And she, I don't know, is like bitchy to a cab driver because she's very upset.
Wow.
Never calls him out by name.
What a great way to
but
do a little side.
Classy lady.
Yeah, classy lady. That is, this is, I'm going to have to go down that rabbit hole.
There's a lot there. There's a lot to gnaw on.
Yeah.
With that little scandal. But yeah, Claire Danes, it's tough because I'm a big Daner. Daner. I'm trying to think of a off the cuff, like a fun
Danish
fan name. I can't. I'm a Danish. Danish. Oh, wow. Thank you for picking up where I left
off. I liked Dater, though.
Has no tie to any sort of word, but it's just fun. And then the last one, there's this one, which like I feel like kind of bad even saying it because she is, maybe I'll cut it out. But here's another one. Today, March 1st, I saw Republican Shannon Doherty looking tiny and bitchy, walking near Astor Place, laden with shopping bags, accompanied by a large man and taller and equally bitchy-looking friend.
I loved that one. I feel like this drum has been beaten so many times, but just like talking about people's bodies and stuff, and like, everybody was like very tiny. Tiny was the operative word, like surprisingly tiny. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's other words that would also be used to tear somebody down or whatever, describe their body. But tiny, I feel like, was used a lot in this column, which I thought was funny.
This kind of just dawned on me. People are always saying in Dumois as well, like surprisingly tall, surprisingly short. It's like, are you people all like, what are you thinking when you look at a screen?
Yeah.
At a TV, at your phone? Like, yes, they're very tall inside these little screens, so they could really be any manner of height.
Yeah.
Or weight. Or don't be so surprised. Expand your mind.
Totally. Like, we all kind of know how this works now with movies. It's not like the old days when they put an actor up on a box and people thought he was actually, you know, 6'1" or whatever.
It's not like Mike TV in Willy Wonka, like, shrunk down and put in its, like, actual size. It's like, no. They're bigger, taller, you know. Get a grip, everyone.
I thought the same thing. That was a, well, I don't know, as anything, you said you were reluctant to include it. Was there something that kind of felt like bad about it? I haven't kept up so much on Shannon Doherty.
Well, she is dying.
Oh my God. Sorry. She is? Feel free to cut this out. But that was shock. I did not know. Wow. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I feel bad. I had no idea.
Well, you know, she didn't have cancer then.
I did. Well, the shopping bags reminded me of like the Olsen twin one which there's a note on that one about the thin one. I was like, that, what a throwback. One.
And I, well, and I, for a split second, I was like, the thin one, they're both thin. And then I remembered, yes, Mary-Kate had the eating disorder.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised when people say that they can't tell the two of them apart. I think they look night and day.
So different. I know. I could not agree more. That's, yeah. It's the people, I don't, yeah. It's upsetting.
It's upsetting. It's like, get a pair of eyes. And people, I can't tell you how many people I've heard say they're identical twins and I've been like, no, they're fraternal. And they're like, no. I'm like, I'm going to put two photos next to each other and you're going to tell me that these people look the same? They look, I can't even believe they're related.
I feel like, I guess I have been staring at them really technically longer than I've stared at my own sister. So in that way, I do feel like just like primally familiar with their face is, that was plural. Yes. And so I do, like, you know, if you're not as obsessed with them as I've been since I was like 2 years old, then I guess maybe, but they do look so different. And I just like, I have all this information about from those little like fan books they used to sell at book fairs. But I think Ashley is older than Mary-Kate by like 2 minutes or something. I have no idea. Something like that.
I believe you are correct. And it was something that they really drove home in the branding of the two of them, of like, she is the responsible one because she's older.
Yeah, absolutely. Ashley always had to be the kind of like buttoned up businesswoman.
Those 2 minutes, well, it just changes everything. Yeah. The birth order, no matter what. It seals the same.
This one did make me wonder, this is probably a dumb question, do celebrities walk into stores anymore? Because it was like, Mary Kate walks into 11, a cool vintage store. And I was thinking, like, you know, people aren't really obviously shopping in person in the same way. There aren't like these hot spots where celebrities are shopping. And so I was thinking, like, I wonder if there is a store that is a place where celebrities are like, they're walking. Maybe it's like Erewhon in LA or something.
Erewhon, yes. But I think it's always still very lower tier celebrities. One time I saw Derek Hough at an Erewhon in Studio City. He was, you know, actually, I take it all back. I saw Derek Hough and I said to myself, he looked shorter than I thought he'd be.
We are all guilty of it.
I was like, huh, he had a more commanding presence on the television. He's quite small. Like he looked maybe like 5'6".
Oh, yeah.
But also he could have been 5'8". I really don't know height.
That's maybe, you know what? We're not above the height fray, it turns out. This was a good full circle of humbling moment.
Yeah, I feel humbled. And, you know, you're never too old or too rich to be humbled. And I am neither of those things. I'm quite young and quite poor.
And still able to be humbled even more.
So with that, we can transition to Tila Tequila.
So excited, so ready.
Give me what I need. We're going to be recapping episode 3. I think it's interesting to me the trajectory of the first 3 episodes. They really piece it out in a way that I didn't remember, and it's kind of unexpected. You know, the first episode, it's just she's with the boys, she's with the girls. They don't even know that they're mixing together. Second episode, we mix them. And then third episode, they move in together. It's really like piecemealing it out.
Yeah. And it's like piecing it out yet going so quickly, because I feel like they eliminate so many people.
5 people eliminated in this episode. So much. And I did realize when they were eliminating some of them, I was like, I just absolutely no facial recognition of who you are. Right. Had to rewind several times to catch a couple of the names.
I feel like they threw some new people in at the end and were just like, they are actually, you haven't met them and they're going home now. It was very, there was one guy at the end, which I don't want to get us out of pace here, but I was like, I swear to God, I have not seen you before.
Same. We begin the episode and there's 17 people left. I forget how many people were eliminated in the first 2 episodes, but they come in to the house. It's, you know, you're moving into Tila's house.
I love that house so freaking much. It's like a dream home of mine.
It is so quintessentially early 2000s, like trash, like a really specific trash early 2000s.
Absolutely. It's a great aesthetic blend of like indoor nature, 80s, 70s, 80s, like rock walls, but with like hyper pink Y2K energy that I think they kind of shoehorned into the set. It's a great blend. It's my ideal blend.
I feel like it was maybe, I don't know, Tommy Lee's house or something. And they're like, we got to add like a little bit of a pink in here or something to make it look like a girl could potentially be here. But so she invites everyone in and she tells them all, you have to leave your key to my heart in this bowl. And it is honestly a bowl that I would love to procure for myself, an inverted disco ball.
Yes, I noted that too.
Very cool. And then she just, again, like we're really speeding right through this. Dump your keys in the bowl and here are the house rules. And she keeps saying rules. She says this several times, rules. And it's just one rule. Don't hook up with anyone but me.
That's really the crux of everything. They're not really getting to know each other. It's just like all hinging on that one rule.
I guess the rules are don't hook up with other people. And rule number 2, follow that rule. I could think of a few more rules judging by what's about to happen next, which is Tila reveals that they will all be sleeping in a giant bed. So like for me, I'm like, how about, and then rule number 2, keep your hands in your own personal space.
Yeah. They could have used that to expound on a little bit more of the ideology in the Teela Mansion.
What did you think about the giant communal bed situation?
I think in a single phrase, they just don't do it like that anymore. That's the thing that came to mind. It's like, that's just the, again, kind of like the halcyon days of early reality TV, pure stunts, no holds barred, and we would never see anything. I mean, I'm pretty sure we would never see anything like that today. It feels like way too much of a liability and
Way too much of a
way too much.
liability.
It's also just so, to state the obvious, it's so silly. It's just like, I love how silly it is.
It's so silly because you look at the bed and you're like, that simply cannot fit 17 adults. And yet it does.
I could just write an oral history of the bed. I'm fascinated.
Honestly, an oral history of the bed is a fantastic idea. I want to hear all sides from the contestants, from the producers, who is saying, like, you guys, we cannot do this. We cannot have all of these people sleeping in a bed together. I would love to know what happened. It just
Yeah.
seems unsafe.
It does. It does. I mean, in the world where you were a contestant on the show, what would be like your survival mechanism for sleeping in a bed with 17 people? Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, would you sleep? They weren't sleeping.
I would not sleep.
Maybe for like 4 hours.
Well, I did note that it's kind of similar to how they have sleeping situations on Survivor now, where it is like a communal bed of bamboo shoots, which I would argue would be worse. However, I feel like the people on Survivor are vetted slightly more than these people who I feel like they probably just picked up at the mall and they're like, you seem fine. I would maybe wear all my clothes that I packed. I feel like that's the only thing you can do.
Yeah, I think that is the only thing you can do. Like, you have very few defenses in that situation. Like, I just like try to find your friend that you've made, sleep next to them.
I was looking at how everyone was configured, and there were some girls that were sleeping next to boys, but there was also like a big hunk of a corner of just like all girls nesting together, trying to make the best of it.
Nesting's a good word.
I wanted your opinion on this. Do you think it was a surprise to them that they would be sleeping in this giant bed, or do you think they told them about it before and ran it by them before it was presented on camera?
This is a great question. I feel like this brings out where I feel equally very naive and very cynical about reality TV production, where part of me feels like it's watching WWE. In other words, everybody knows what's going on, but you're still cheering for the good guy or the bad guy or whatever, you know? And so my inclination is to think that they all knew about it because I feel like they would be walking around this house and there either would already be the big bed there. Or several PAs or whatever, whoever would be bringing in parts of this big bed to put together. So either way, I feel like it would be so visible. And my feeling is that they knew about it. What do you think?
I was getting the sense that they knew because their reactions seemed very subdued.
Yeah.
Whereas I think realistically, especially the women would be like, I'm not doing this, or like, are you serious? Like in the second episode where it's revealed that they're going to have to compete with guys, and one of the contestants is like, no way, see you later. And they just make her take a very long walk in wedges down like a Mulholland Drive hill.
It was such a humbling walk.
A humbling walk. It's like, listen, let's not punish this woman for having boundaries, okay? But I feel like there would have been stronger reactions. It's a little bit more delicate to have everyone sleep in a bed together rather than just letting everyone know, like, oh, there's going to be members of the opposite sex that you're competing with.
Yeah, definitely. That's even in the crazy days of 2007 and before, those like, oh no, like Wild West days. I feel like they would still maybe kind of, yeah, maybe have to give them a heads up a little bit or something.
And that needs to be included in the oral history. What lawyer was like, okay, no. We cannot spring this on them because we all need them signing waivers.
Yeah.
And, there's some legality.
There's some, but you know, now that I'm sort of second guessing that, where I feel like actually, Maybe there wasn't at all. I feel like things were just so flawless in a way where I think they were probably just like, if this is the least of our worries, that they're kind of all like sleep. Maybe not though. Maybe they were more worried about that than I give them credit for.
Or here's another option. There's a secret third option. Perhaps they didn't tell them the first time around. They shoot it. A bunch of the women have big problems over it. The production team has to talk them down, reassure them there will be cameras, they will be safe. Maybe even we will have a separate bedroom if you really feel uncomfortable and you can like remove yourself, something like that. And then they're like, okay, let's take it one more time. Your reactions. Now, this is me thinking with my 2023 brain. Yes, it would be drama for some of the women to be really upset about it, but would it also be kind of off-putting and take some of the fun out of it to know that, like, they're essentially being made to sleep with men?
And it would have been a great little drama thing if they had actually had like one or two of the women leave and go to another bed. In tune with this episode, they were unexpectedly muted about things.
Very muted, and you would think that they would be the most animated about having to not only just share a room with disgusting bros, but also just sharing a bed in general. I don't know. I don't even like to share a bed with a lover. I like my space.
Oh my God, yeah, absolutely. Sleepovers are so stressful. They were so stressful for me as a kid, although that's just a, not everybody feels that way. But it was that energy of like, is everybody sleeping? And Domenico, let's be honest, he's being freaking weird. He's like sitting cross-legged and staring.
These poor women, they're lesbians. They get to eliminate that part of their lives of sharing a bed with a boy who doesn't remember to take his shoes off before like swinging his feet onto the bed. And now you have 10 men you're sharing a bed with. That just seems
And
unfair.
they seem so greasy in a sense. Actually, in a way, everybody seems kind of oiled up, but especially the
The
guys.
guys seem truly, literally greased. They feel like they've been greased under a car. The
Yeah.
ladies,
And like a glitter body spray.
oh God, can you imagine the commingling of body sprays? I don't know what that smelled like.
Heady, it must have been like being in a casino. That feeling of just like fragrance, synthetic air. I feel like it was just like cherry blossom, cucumber, like
Lot of
that.
cucumber melon.
A lot of like, what's the one, CK1 or whatever popular.
What was that bottle? It was like a pink rounded bottle. It almost looked like a little pocket rocket vibrator situation. And it was like baby soft or something.
Oh, that rings a bell. Yeah.
I remember we used to call it baby prostitute.
That seems great. I want a bottle.
I know, right? It's a vintage relic. I gotta find one. Find it on eBay. But yeah, so they're in the bed and it's pretty much just going back and forth about the bed. They have a quintessential early 2000s pillow fight, which I did appreciate that the men had to participate in, which was at least bucking the heteronorm. They play spin the bottle, then go to a stripper room. Vanessa tries to dance on the pole. She falls, hits her head, which I don't know if you clocked this at all when she falls and Tila in her confessional says something like,
Vanessa thought she was being all sexy and she jumps up on the pole and that bitch just falls straight to her head.
Yes, totally. I feel like everybody's a bitch. It's all like bitches.
Yeah, I feel like Tila really aligns energy-wise with the men way more than the women.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And it kind of like every facet, I feel like, of her.
Yes.
She doesn't really seem to be, at least what we see, she doesn't really seem to be very like emotional. She doesn't seem to be really wanting to have emotional conversations.
No.
And yeah, she's just more the vibe of like a cool guy.
Yeah, whenever there's any sort of emotional situation, it seems like Tila does a very hetero guy thing, which is you're talking, and then they look at you, and they're like, you are so beautiful. And you're like, oh, I guess I'm done talking. But then when something happens in a confessional, she'll say, well, I'm coming out for the first time and I really need like people to support me. And it's like, I feel like the women are trying to, but
Yeah.
you're not really like letting them in.
Totally. She is not giving them much. They try to say one word and she's like, let's make out. Not to keep comparing past and present here, but it's like today, her coming out would be like this whole big thing, and it's pretty minimized. It's not really talked about.
Yeah, it's she just mentions it, but I guess how could it be taken seriously when the show itself doesn't take the lesbians seriously as lesbians?
Definitely.
It's like,
Yeah.
are you lesbians? Let's put them in a big bed to find out.
Yeah, let's test this.
And to their
Yeah.
credit, I will say, when they put them in the big bed, they did find out that Rebecca, so that evening, they're in their big bed. Domenico is sitting up watching everyone, and Rebecca is sleeping next to Steven. And they're clearly, you can see in the night vision that they're going at it in
Yeah.
the big bed.
I guess she's like being fingered. Isn't that what Domenico says?
I'll give it to Domenico. It did appear that way.
It did, it did.
I think you often think like, oh, what happens under a blanket stays under the blanket, but it's actually pretty, you can see where things are moving, and it's like, well, two and two together. He seems like a pretty reliable narrator, and also to his credit, he wasn't exactly sure who was involved, and he did not specifically name names because he wasn't sure. So this is a man with real conviction and standards.
And a display on a stuffed animal at their big circus party.
That's a guy with this hand and was lifting the sheet, and with the other hand it was fingering, was touching the girl like this, and I could feel the girl moves.
What's he doing right now?
Mm-hmm. He's showing Tila on a stuffed animal what supposedly he watched Steven do to what's her name?
Oh God, the circus party was bleak.
Yeah, and even Brandy's like, a circus is supposed to be fun, and this wasn't fun.
And I really believe that Brandy was going through it during the Carnival Circus extravaganza because she was also caught making out with Rebecca. And she's like,
She's making me look bad, like we were had some kind of like love thing, which was never the case.
The
You
truth
know?
Will prevail. And you got no, I know you don't have a guilty conscience. I know you
No,
don't.
it's not.
You're frustrated, you're
I'm worried
irritated.
about what other people think. I'm the one that looks like always the bad one. So I don't even get a chance for her to see like past my outer image. And everyone else does, so I look like the slut or the bad girl, and it's not even that case. Like, I'm tired of always having to defend what kind of person I am.
So real.
That felt very real. I felt for her.
Yeah, I know. Like, good girls don't always have to have like one tone of hair. Sometimes they can have the dark underneath blonde on top and not be bad girls. So, yeah.
Exactly. Sometimes you can have pencil thin eyebrows and very, very dark eyeshadow, and you're still a good girl.
You're still a good girl. Plus, she's a mortgage consultant, which is a really grown-up job.
That's a very, oh, poor Brandy. She's a good girl. She got wrapped up in something, you know?
Yeah.
Who among
She
us?
no, who among us? She seems like a sweetheart, and I'm writing for her so far.
So the people eliminated were Rebecca, Rob, Crystal, Eric, and Alex. I was really disappointed to see Crystal go. I really liked her attitude in the beginning, where she's
Yeah.
talking to the guys and they're like, "Do girls hate us?" And she was like, "Please don't generalize us." And they're like, "Well, you're the cool one." It's like, okay, well.
She was like the mediator. She kind of was trying to like educate him a little bit.
She was trying to cross a bridge, extend a hand, not just cut them off completely. But that doesn't really seem like something Tila would be into because she's got a real mean streak, that one, as evidenced by, you know, the whole anti-Semitism. But back then we did not know. She just, you
Yeah.
know, just kind of a bad attitude at times.
Totally. Well, and I know I'm sure she was like told to do it in this way, but it is very startling how cold she is when she's letting people go.
So cold.
She's like, I don't remember anything about you. Bye.
Bye.
Which is maybe that's kind of more honest in a way, but this is not The Bachelor. They're not like, I'm so sorry. It was very, very cold.
No, I think that is a Tila Tequila special because I was watching Rock of Love recently and Brett, you know, it's the same era, it's the same kind of vibe. And Brett is very like effusive with each person he eliminates. "You're beautiful, but I just like didn't get to know you enough this time, but I wish you well on your journey." And Tila is just like, "Ew, get out."
She is such a dude. She's such a shithead bro.
She's such a shithead bro, which she's bucking gender norms.
Actually is kind of genuinely cool because I feel like that yeah. She did it sort of seamlessly. It wasn't like a thing. She just kind of, that was her personality.
Now, you were saying you're gunning for Brandy. She's a fave at this moment. Was there anyone else that kind of spoke to you?
I don't know why I'm kind of randomly riding with Vanessa. Because she's not yeah. really been a very prominent part of things so far. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it's just because I found her Twitter. And it was that's a great read because it's Twitter from like 2007. Ooh. And the way she tweets is wild. So that's really, it's really wild. Before he screwed Rebecca over, I was kind of randomly into Steven too. I was like, he has
Same.
Like... Okay, good. I'm glad I wasn't totally off base in that because he has like classic Abercrombie and Fitch model at your local mall looks.
Yes.
And I love that vibe. That's very nostalgic. But then I even like did a little freeze frame on this because once he throws Rebecca under the bus, I think, or at least like maybe not throws her under the bus, but he is like, she's the one who gets thrown off and he yeah. does not. But there was like a little like, just flat camera flash towards his eyes. And all of a sudden they looked dark to me. And I was like, I'm going to start calling you Dark Steven. I think there's something sinister going on there.
Yeah, there's like a dark triad energy. You can never trust an Abercrombie boy, even though those were the ones I was attracted to back in the day. Cannot be trusted. Yeah.
And they can be some of the darkest. I had a big crush on an Abercrombie and Fitch local mall model who was like really into chemtrails. You would talk to me a lot about chemtrails. And in a way, like it doesn't make sense, yet it makes sense. You know, the darkness, it's all connected.
It's all connected. It's the Venn diagram that just like moves through each other and at one point is a circle. Which
yes,
is classically
absolutely.
How Venn diagrams work.
Yeah, exactly. And also the Abercrombie and Fitch stores were so dark, literally. So it's just all kind of fits.
So dark and smelly.
Yeah, I love that smell. Many people don't.
I do too.
Do you? Okay. I would like almost wear that smell. I love a bad smell.
See, I would still wear if people didn't recognize it, but I'm too afraid people would, is the Abercrombie 8. That was my signature scent for a very long time.
I don't know if I've smelled that, or if I do, I don't remember. I did not know.
Ooh, Abercrombie 8. It's not the signature scent of the store. It's not what they spray on all the plastic leaves. Did you ever catch an Abercrombie employee spraying the store with it?
No, that sounds like seeing a fairy in the forest. That sounds like a great sight.
I saw it once, I think probably because I worked in the mall. So I had come in like before they had opened and was walking by. And I saw a little shirtless bro just twinkling around, spraying the fake leaves of plants.
Oh, I want to make like a short film about that. That sounds really poetic for some reason.
It's really beautiful, right? The little twink fairy.
A little twink fairy. That sounds so great. I'll also just never forget the flat intonation of, hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? That was always the great greeting. That was just like, so like, we're friends. We're so not. It's not, I love that.
You would make fun of me. You would call me a lesbian in middle
Absolutely.
School. So no.
To you, I was simply weird girl. But
yeah. I don't have a name.
Give me what I need.
Okay, episode 4, let me just say right off the bat, the first thing I said within minutes of watching the episode when it began was, finally, we're getting somewhere. Finally.
Absolutely. I feel like it is telling that to discuss this episode, I have up an obituary on one side of my screen and mm-hmm. a TMZ item about drug possession on the other side of my screen. I think that says it all in many ways.
When I started this series at first, I was like, oh God, I thought this would be so much messier. Now we're getting to TMZs and obits. So that means we're in business and it's delivering in the way that I would hope. So in episode 3, we talked a lot about Brandy and she was really going through it. Right off the bat, Brandy gets even realer this episode.
She really does. It turns into, well, it just gets very surreal.
First moment, it seems like a small thing, but Brandy gets out of bed and in her confessional, she says She doesn't know how she's still here and Rebecca's not, and she needs alone time with Tila. And on the surface, that doesn't seem like much, but the way she says it, it's with such pain.
Yeah.
Like, this is real.
I was almost puzzled by that. It had been a little while since I dove into the Tila universe from our last episode, and I almost felt like I'd accidentally started the episode in the middle or something. I think maybe it was because she was just seemed so immediately pained.
Yeah, and I will say, from the jump, from the first episode, I thought, is this woman on drugs? But then she said that she was a loan processor. And I was like, well, that's such a big girl job. Like,
yeah,
I guess she just looks like she's on drugs.
I totally thought the same thing. I mean, I did feel like maybe I was jumping to that unfairly based off of her, like, what do they call that double die job? That
I don't know what they called it, but like a skunk, like a flattened skunk.
Yes. I feel that about her and about Amanda. I'm not entirely sure if I feel convinced about that, but she just has kind of maybe like a bedhead sort of messy look.
I thought she also looked pretty strung out, but also for the times, people didn't have a great grasp of retinols or skincare in general. People weren't running to the med spa in the way that they are today. But based off of her behavior, she does feel at least wasted.
I think waste is more the operative word. I feel like there was a bedhead look that was a little bit popular around that time too.
Yeah.
Kind of like pre-indie sleaze, like party girl kind of Kesha vibe.
She is giving Kesha. She's also giving like it's a long shoot day and she's drunk and passes out on a couch. And then it's like, okay, Amanda, time to do this challenge. And all of her makeup is just smeared across her face.
Totally. Brandy looks more, I'll just say, professional.
Yes, despite it all. So after we'd have a throwaway moment with Brandy that just really reverberated off the screen for me, everybody in the house gets a note from Tila. This is, of course, in a time where we're living in like Tyra mail or Survivor tree mail. On a shot at love, there's a message in a bottle. It says, I want to see when the boys face off against the girls, who wins?
Everything's a battle of the sexes with these people.
But they're going to be competing in a biathlon, which I will give it to them. I did like that. I mean, barely a play on words. It's just there are biathlons.
But it's good nonetheless. They saw an opportunity and they seized it.
As you should. But they each get different shirts with the gender symbols on them. And there's a pink one where Danny is like, I don't want to wear this. Danny, of course, being now the only butch person there. And it throughout the episode, it's as if no one's ever seen a butch lesbian before.
Totally.
And then Ryan says, although he's competing in a biathlon, nothing about him is bi. It's like, oh, no one asked, actually.
Ryan.
I think we all got it.
He is bi, Ryan, maybe.
Which, he is. It's like, thou doth, my friend.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's like, darling, it has already been established that the boys are straight and Tila is bi. Like, no one's worried that you participating in a biathlon makes you bi. I feel like he's almost worried that just being in this competition, something's going to rub off on him. Like, I feel like maybe he's never been in contact with anyone even remotely gay.
Totally. They're just like perpetually on a sixth grade playground where everything is like gay, homo, whatever. I guess that was just the time, but it feels very incessant.
I actually felt like, even though we really saw a lot of that in all three episodes, for some reason, this episode feels a little more, I don't know what's the word, like it feels a little more nefarious and it's a little more gay panicky.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know.
It sounds weird to say that it had like some levity to it before, because obviously it's not. Okay. Yeah. No, but I feel like it was being dumb for the camera. And now they are really sounding, like you said, sort of panicky about it. And there's just more of a nasty bite to it, I feel like.
Yeah, there's a sinister quality to it. I wonder if part of that might be that now the contestants are getting to know each other more. So this sort of insults are maybe becoming a little bit more personal, or the more that they're there and sharing beds with people. Oh, also, it's maybe like setting in that people that they know are going to see this.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So maybe, you know, when it first happened, because they come in, they think, I mean, this is all for the men, of course, but they come in thinking that they're going to be on a straight dating show. Yeah. They're given the surprise and they're probably like blindsided by it. But, you know, they're still hyped up on Bud Light and the camera and hot summer sun. But now there's a little more time to think and it's like, oh, I have to make sure everybody knows that I'm not gay.
Yeah, totally. I also just feel like, cynically, I feel like with shows, I always assume, especially now more than ever, that people like know what they're getting into and are just doing it for followers or whatever other career reasons. Mm-hmm. But I guess back then, people were sort of going into it probably kind of blind, except for Vanessa, the casting associate.
I know, right? I think that is one of the things that you do really have to keep in mind when you're watching any old school reality show, is they have much less of an awareness of what they're getting into, much less of an awareness of being on camera. I would liken it to the way Real Housewives is now. Back in the day when women were on it, they had much less of an idea of what it meant to be on a reality show, like how popular it could become, who would see it, how they would be portrayed, how people might edit them. The fact that things could be taken out of context or spliced together. Whereas now, everyone is so savvy about that stuff. It's almost not as good as the old housewives because everyone's too aware of themselves and too aware of like how to play the game.
No, I think that's why I genuinely enjoy watching old reality shows more so than I do anything from the last few years, is because it does feel like actually like they're being surprised along with you, or they're like kind of fumbling in this kind of more like pure way. And yeah, I don't know, that's just like very interesting to watch.
With all that said, they go outside to the backyard and they participate in their biathlon. Tila is dressed like a referee and Ashley says that he wants to ride her like a zebra, which
confusing.
She's a very tiny woman. Yeah. Get off of her. That's dangerous. Tila says it's girls against guys. Whoever wins will spend time with her in either heaven or hell, with no other explanation. So the biathlon just included, it's just like a bunch of blow up obstacles. They have to blow up a sex doll first, then carry it as they run through tires, find a necklace in a kiddie pool filled with sand, and run up a blow up slide. It's very low rent Survivor.
Yeah.
I would say.
Definitely.
That kind of like leads to nothing. And it's also so short. The whole thing must have lasted 20 minutes.
Definitely.
Tops.
The producers were probably like, shit, that was shorter than we thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me so much, this is sort of unrelated, but it reminded me so much of like doing a youth group activity in middle school, high school, just being like just sweaty outside and kind of horny because, you know, there's like hot people around, but you're also just like, I hate this activity that we're doing right now.
Exactly. The boys look like they're going to have an easy win until Domenico can't get up the slide in a way that I don't think he would throw the competition just for a moment of being like funny, but it is shocking how he is the only one to struggle with getting up that inflatable slide.
My feeling on that is that it's a pro wrestling style moment before people knew that pro wrestling wasn't real. Which is that I feel like he absolutely was told to struggle on that step. I feel very much like they wanted to have the girls in heaven.
Yes.
They wanted them to have the outfits and they like somebody had to throw it, but they didn't think that people would be savvy enough at that time to be like, huh, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
But you're completely right, because then the girls win and Tila asks them, do they want to go to heaven or hell? And just, it's a unanimous heaven. I will say this. Where Tila takes them, that's my heaven.
You and me both, sister. That was, I like took screenshots of heaven, basically.
Tila tells the girls to go, I wrote down what she said. It was, she says, go get hotted up.
I got that too. I was wondering, that felt like a funny slip that she made.
Yeah, I feel like she wanted to say, like, go get gussied up, and she realized that kind of sounds not exactly her brand. Or, like, go get dolled up. And she's like, oh, that doesn't work. Go get hotted up.
That was a great moment where I feel like you'd watch that back and be like, oh, that was embarrassing.
But I will start saying that now.
Yeah.
I have to go get hotted
up. That is exactly what is needed sometimes. So I feel like that's a great verb.
It trickles off the tongue. I'll tell you that much. They all, like, get into a Hummer limo or something. And they're all dressed like angels in, like, Legs Avenue. I feel like the producers went to, I don't know, like a Spencer's Gifts or something and pulled all of the Legs Avenue costumes in those little plastic bags just off the rack. And they're like, we'll need all of these.
Clear them out. Clear out the racks.
At certain points throughout this season, we are going to need every last one.
Oh, totally. I mean, they were just like Halloween costumes that these girls would be wearing at that time, or anybody would be wearing at that time.
Yeah. To further describe Heaven, you walk in. It looks very 90s. I felt like I was in a scene of Spice World. Everything was white.
Yeah.
A white piano, one of those clear bubble chairs hanging from the ceiling, white floors, white ceilings, white walls.
I thought it was very funny. They really highlighted this is very early 2000s, the oxygen bar.
That's the first thing they mention when they walk in. It's not the cage full of doves. It's, oh, there's an oxygen bar here.
But then they never use the oxygen bar.
Now, I will say this. They have the oxygen bar. There's also, they find Tila already sitting at the inside white bar. And she's looking gorgeous, dressed as an angel. And she's sitting at a bar with a huge ice sculpture. And then outside, here's another missed opportunity. They go outside and there's a pool with a boat in it.
I did not catch the boat. That's wild.
There's a pool with a boat in it. Danny points it out. We never hear hide nor hair about this boat again. Yeah. It is just quite literally a boat in a pool. It does not fit.
I think this scene is when the episode just dips into, like, dynamically surreal territory.
There's also an enormous raw bar at the outdoor bar next to the pool, which I don't know if I really want my king crab legs out in the hot sun.
It seems like this has been sitting out there for a while. It looked great, and it was a chic touch.
It was a very chic touch, but I kind of feel like that raw bar was not real.
Oh my God. Now I feel like I was being naive. It was not, maybe it was not real. That is so true.
Honestly, the entire thing, I kind of wondered, did someone shoot a music video there the day before?
Yeah.
And some people at MTV were like, oh, hey, actually, we have this set. Do you want to think of something to go with this? Or something?
Yes.
Like, I don't know. It just seemed so, like, it would have been so much money. And we were not used to seeing any sort of budget in the show up until this point.
That's a great point. This is very Hollywood savvy of you. I feel like this is totally, because it explains, why it was so much money, and also kind of why they didn't use any of it either.
Yes. They don't touch a single fucking
thing.
Which
is so weird. Like, why not? Because were they in the pool at all, or, like, anywhere? They definitely did not use the oxygen bar.
They did not use the oxygen bar. They did not use the pool. They did not eat a single thing.
Single oyster.
That was a set. That was a set.
I would even go so far as to say a set that hadn't been used yet, because they weren't allowed to touch anything.
We were so in and out of there so fast. Oh, also, here's another thing. They take them through the mansion. They're in seconds outside.
Yeah.
And then we never go back in. Like, they said, you can do a walkthrough. You can get a couple moments inside, and then we're out. You are getting your grubby paws outdoors.
It actually, now that I'm thinking about it, gave off the effect that they were, like, breaking and entering, because they really just couldn't leave a fingerprint.
Yes. And especially with all that white. Imagine the fake tanner.
They couldn't sit down truly anywhere.
Mm-mm.
I feel like these are the sorts of details that a lot of people don't care about, but that I would just love to dive. I want to hire a private detective and have them figure out what happened there.
Same. Listen, if you're not interested in these types of truly weird details, then you're listening to the wrong podcast.
That's a great point. I shouldn't have even identified things like that, because I feel like I would almost qualify them as the liminal space category of the reality show, the early reality show. You're in this like in between space of like, what was this used for? What was this intended for? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just is so fascinating to me.
But so they go outside and they get their Tila time. There are no other activities. There's no pool. There's no food. At shooting, they were in and out in an hour.
Yeah.
But Tila sits down with Sarah, who has the Monroe piercing. You can just tell she's getting eliminated.
She hasn't contributed much.
And then she talks to Ashley the Virgin very briefly, and they just pass a mint between each other's mouths. And then Tila sits down with Danny, who is not dressed like an angel. She has a white shirt on and khakis. And Tila acts like she's never seen a butch lesbian before.
So, my little angel.
Yes.
Why are you the only one who's not in your angel outfit?
This is my angel outfit.
It is?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
This is who I am, so.
I mean, I guess that's just her style, you know. It's cool, I respect that. They're right. Just like chilling with the boys, like whatever, chilling.
I just chill, yeah.
And of course, earlier in the episode, she's like, I don't want to wear this pink girly gender symbol shirt. And then she's forced to. Poor Danny, throughout this entire thing, the way she's put into these situations of having to be so femme.
Yeah.
When you can tell she is so uncomfortable.
It's hard to watch.
She thought she was going to be on a lesbian dating show. And when she was first there, there was a couple other butch or butch adjacent, butch-esque, flirting with butch type of ladies. And now they're all eliminated. I mean, how many more times are they going to ask her to put on a Legs Avenue costume?
Oh my God.
And some PA is going to have to run to Target and get a button down in the same color for her to wear.
Bless. She is just like the most pure person on that show by a long shot. Mm-hmm. I feel like she is so kind and genuine. Yes. And I feel so bad.
Yes. But not as bad as I feel for Brandy in the next moment.
Wow.
This is when things got very real to me. Brandy is supposed to get her alone time with Tila, which, of course, at the top of the episode, Brandy is very worried about getting eliminated because she hasn't had alone time with Tila. She finally gets her moment, and I don't understand what happens.
I am probably misusing my quantum physics terms, but it felt like just there was a glitch in the time-space continuum. It happened so quickly. It had sort of a car accident effect.
Yeah, it very much has a car accident quality to it, where all of a sudden everyone's screaming and Tila is in Brandy's arms like a koala bear, just like running up a tree, just absolutely on top of her, clutching her, and everyone's screaming. And then all of a sudden Tila jumps off and runs away. Brandy is nearly in tears.
Oh my God, yeah.
She looks like devastated, and we pan down and we realize that she's walked over the head of a lizard, and the lizard is, you know, of course, deceased, did not survive. And Tila just goes, well, I can't have alone time with you because I'm too upset.
Ice cold.
And then it's just like, well, everybody get back into the Hummer. We're out of here.
It was just bizarre on so many levels because it happened so quickly and it was a little unclear, the sequencing of things. I guess that was maybe due to like kind of poor editing or something in that moment, or just like confusing to me at least. And
I think they didn't have cameras on them. Like they were walking to whatever location.
Yeah.
So they did not think that such monumental things would be happening in the walk from point A to point B.
And I guess to ask the simple question, do you think that was real?
I think so, because I don't see a producer pulling Brandy aside and being like, hey, can you step on that lizard head on the way to your date?
And they'd have to put the lizard, for maybe a fake lizard or whatever, you know.
Oh, at this point in time, I don't think they're really worried about what PETA has to say. They're just like snapping on a lizard.
That is very true. I just felt like it did feel very real. I can't remember what Brandy says, but I think she's just like, I squished its head.
And she looks truly devastated
by it. Yeah. God, that sent like red blush up my neck. You know, that just that shame, like visceral embarrassment of, oh my God, like you felt like you had done it.
And of course, Tila is not nice about it in any way. And I don't think Tila cares at all. The look in her eyes feels very like, I'm over this.
Yeah, totally.
She's probably so sick of dealing with people, having to be like a bachelorette or a bachelor on one of these shows. I think it must be so exhausting that I think she was just like, screw you. I don't feel like shooting this. Let's just go back to the house.
Totally. I think that's very true.
Who can say? Or maybe Tila is a true animal lover and that really sent her for a loop.
I can see both ways. You know, like I can imagine like a girl in school randomly like crying about something. You're like, what are you crying? And she's like, it's because this happened to this animal. Like it feels very elementary school girl or something.
Listen, I love God's creatures, large and small, of course. But I was never one of those animal girls. I remember in class when people would be like, no, don't kill the spider. We have to put it in a cup and release it. I'm like, get on with it. I don't have time for this.
It was a bit of a pick-me quality to have when you wanted to get some attention.
It's up there with wearing a hospital bracelet to school. And being like,
oh, well, I had an anaphylactic shock attack yesterday, so I had to go to the hospital and I didn't have time to take off the tag.
Exactly.
Is that too specific?
No, I think that's spot on. I will say I'm just glad to know that Brandy's still with us.
Now, don't worry, she is not the obituary we were talking about, but she was arrested for meth possession in 2008. But I found her LinkedIn and those eyebrows have grown in. Her hair is a simple highlight, a simple low light.
Oh, she looks great.
Then we leave the girls. They leave heaven. They leave heaven untouched. And the boys get sent to hell, which is really just a dominatrix BDSM dungeon that is in the house.
Yeah. I was wondering about that.
In the actual Tila's crib. And it definitely looked like that was there before. I feel like they picked this rental because it had a stripper room and a BDSM dungeon.
Yeah.
Tila just takes the boys down to the dungeon and it's gimmicks of her whipping them and putting them in cages. The thing that honestly stuck out the most to me was they're like about to go to the dungeon and the boys are leaving their bedroom and you get a shot of the big bed and there is nary a sheet on it. It is just white mattress.
I didn't catch that.
And comforters. These people are grody. Like,
and the whole vibe of the whole show is yeast infection, bacterial infection. Everything seems so grimy.
Vaginosis on every surface. Airborne HPV. And listen, I don't think Gardasil had come out. Even if it had, it was too new and they were too old. So that is just a Gardasil-free zone. It is just flying blind. Good luck to them all. But in the dungeon, Ashley, so I clocked that this episode was the episode where everybody's like, I'm in love with Tila. And Ashley sits down with Tila.
I like the butt whipping you gave me.
Like, why didn't you scream at all? Does that not hurt you?
No.
What hurts you? I mean, you're really fast.
What hurts me?
Yeah.
If you cut me out. Because I know you have this hardcore look, but you're a sweatpants girl. Just like me.
Yeah.
And we'd cuddle up. And once that cuddle and that interconnection would need to be on, and it'd be all over, lights out.
She is keeping a safe distance.
Yes, she is.
Excuse me, boy.
Yeah, won't you mind your own damn business, for real.
See, we're trying to have one-on-one time, and, you know.
Because they're scared.
Why?
Because they know. They know I'm for real.
That you're the sweet one.
I mean, I'm falling in love. I really am.
Wild hearts can't be broken. You try and get too close.
Are you being serious right now?
Run away.
Well, I don't want to break your heart, ever.
Run away.
What can I say? I'm in love. If I get hurt, I'm going to get hurt.
I think he's really serious. And it kind of like, whoa. Something's a little off. Something.
It was a great line, but I also feel like that's when they begin to shoehorn in this narrative that Ashley's like too much, too crazy, which I mean, I think it turns out to be, but I'm curious to know the behind the scenes of what made them in this episode pivot him. I have a theory, but we'll save that for the end. It's a simple one. It's nothing too controversial, but I feel like they had to find a reason to get rid of him.
I think you're right too. After that, they have one more competition. And it's a massage competition. Everyone has to give Tila a 1 minute massage. And she is going to pick a boy and a girl, whoever is the best to have like a moment alone with her in the hot tub before she does her final elimination. Now, thank God, poor Brandy, she finally gets a win here. She's studied to be a massage therapist.
This is her time to shine.
No iguanas in sight, just her hands and soft voice asking Tila, how do you like to be touched? Which I think that probably won Tila over instantly.
Yes. They both both Brandy and Ryan were very much like reporting for duty, ready to be a massage therapist. I feel like it was clear they were going to win.
Very much so. Also, I feel like Brandy is very consent forward. She's a little ahead of her time, whereas no one else really seems to be. They're like, oh, massage, so I'm going to get on top of you. Like, Vanessa, our casting associate, undoes her top and starts licking her back.
They heard massage and were like, I'm going to be rubbing my tits on your back. I'm going to be like fingering your ass. They really misread the assignment.
It's truly inappropriate. I do feel like part of it is the expectation of a bisexual. Part of it is the fetishization of an Asian woman. Yeah. But they all just really get the sense that they can do whatever they want to her. They're all massaging her. And first, I think his name's Steve. He's like feeling jealous. And then they go to Amanda, and Amanda has full ass tears in her eyes, and she's like, I don't like other people touching Tila. And then they go to Ashley, and he's like, oh, I don't like the boys touching her. It's okay with the girls, but I don't like the boys. And they're all falling apart. Tila announces the winners. Of course, it's Brandy and Ryan. And so she takes them away to the grotto, and everyone just loses their shit. Vanessa starts crying. Vanessa walks away to a wall and just like puts her, like goes to a rock wall and just kind of like rests a hand against it and her forehead. It's like, you guys all get a grip.
I feel like they were all like toddlers who have been like out for too long and are beginning to break down. And they're just like, maybe it's been a long day, but they all are.
They're all wasted. And yeah, this is so low budget that I'm sure they're getting these episodes in way too fast. Like probably like borderline illegal, like overtime situation.
Totally.
Brandy and Ryan go to the grotto. Brandy asks her, would you be offended if I kiss you?
Once again, very into consent. Brandy ahead of her time.
And also, darling, so timid, so not much self-esteem happening there. And Tila's like, would I be offended? No, what? Then we're at the elimination where we finally have a smaller elimination, whereas before we've had, you know, five people at a time. In this elimination, Sarah's eliminated. She takes it like a champ. Ashley is eliminated. And he loses his goddamn mind.
I got so inspired watching this scene. Like, I wanted to write a movie based off of this scene alone. At the very least, a short story. It was like so poetic and weird, epic even.
All right, hon. I want to set something straight to you. I'm falling in love for you. I fell in love for you.
I just looked at him. I didn't know what to say.
I have to speak my piece. I'm going to start from the biggest bullshitter to the least bullshitter. And I'll start with Bobby, this little frat boy motherfucker. You're a shit talker. So if you want that in life, go ahead. And I go to my man. I've liked him more than anybody. You know the reason why I've liked him? Because he reminds me of one of my best friends. And what my best friend was a snake in the grass. He's lied on numerous occasions, and he'll fucking bite you in the end, Tila. Domenico. Dude, you're perverted. You sick every single one of these girls out. He sicks them totally out. He's not here for you.
Everybody's just kind of sitting there kind of like, wow, this is crazy.
And the girls, other than a couple of them, they're so screwed up in their head and so confused if they want guys or girls. They don't know what they want in life. Cocksucker. What cocksucker? What motherfucker? What? Get off me.
Ashley has a real gravitas. He has a real Southern Gothic quality to him. He's giving glass menagerie.
He really, Southern Gothic is exactly it. He's like a pro wrestler from the 80s doing his promo on TV. It was great.
He goes to Domenico, and I actually couldn't tell what he was saying, but he said something like, he might have said exactly what I think he said. He sicks all the girls out.
I think he said exactly that.
Yeah, like he creeps them all out. He sicks them all out, all the girls out. He says, the girls are all sick in the head. And I mean, listen. And some of them do seem like they could potentially be sick in the head. And here's why I think he's right. I don't love the American justice system and how we rely on a jury of our peers, because sometimes you just have a lot of people who have nothing to do in the middle of a day. And it's like, do you really want those people deciding your fate necessarily. Like, listen, we're not getting into the nuances of the merits of the jury system.
No, this is however, great.
Is there a bunch of people who can just in the middle of the day leave their lives to go be on a dating show? I mean, in 2007?
Definitely.
I don't know. Maybe some of these people are sick in the head.
Even though people are savvier about it nowadays, even then there was the same desire, I'm sure, for fame. So you are like also functioning with those people too. Ashley probably did come from West Virginia and was like, these people are all crazy.
Oh, definitely. Like a Hollywood elite, blah, blah, blah. After he goes after the girls, Bobby coughs a cocksucker. Ashley charges at him. They start like beating the shit out of each other. Vanessa gets caught in the middle of it. She's pulled into this fight and she's trying to escape. And Virgin Ashley, she goes, I always knew he was crazy.
I feel like Ashley is a little bit of the unsung hero too. I mean, she's very like, she's kind of in the background. She's very calm, cool, collected.
I did look her up. She is an actress and she has a little career for herself. Like she's a legit actress.
Okay, good for her.
The producers pull him out. They throw Ashley out into the yard. He finally leaves and then all of a sudden, a hush.
Bobby was outside. He was hurt. I was so scared. I called the ambulance. When they got here, the paramedics decided to take Bobby to the hospital to take some x-rays and make sure he was okay. Being scared for Bobby's safety made me realize I really care for this guy. I hope he's gonna be okay.
And then suddenly we're in the back of an ambulance.
That was another confusing cut of like, we didn't really, at least that I recall, I don't think we saw him get, because it was like his leg was in the bandage or something. Like, what happened to his leg?
We'll have to see what happens in the next episode. But Tila's like, I hope that he's going to be okay. And it's like, he won't. He's going to die. What do you mean?
It turns out that actually left him paralyzed and he is no longer going to be on the show anymore.
He has a brain bleed. Kelsey, this was an absolute delight. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. This was such a delight. I am so happy to be here.
Tell everyone where they can follow you.
Please follow me at Very Famous Magazine.
Beautiful. Everybody, you know where you can find me. You already found me. I'm right here.
But, you know, rate, review, subscribe, follow on Patreon. Like I said, I'm young and poor.
All right. See you all next week with episode 5.
We're deep in Tila world. There's no leaving now.
No leaving now. We're setting up a P.O. box.
Find us in heaven.